What kind of fun is waiting for you at King's Island? The, holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The, make a splash all summer kind of fun. The, I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at King's Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun this season. King's Island is now open weekends.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Hello and welcome to In the Pen, a podcast about relievers, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Jake Crumpler, and as always, I'm joined by Pitcherless bullpen expert, Rick Graham. Rick, we talked for a little bit about baseball, the landscape of relievers right now. Sometimes I get on here and we go, you know, the opener, and I'm like, what's going on in baseball? But what's going on in your life that's interesting that can give the listeners an insight into the legend, the myth, Rick Graham?
What's going on in my life? I mean, it's just baseball, man. No, I, you know, it's, you know, busy times, busy work time of year for work, for, you know, this, for my day job, for writing. But, you know, also, I'm not just a baseball fan. I, you know, big, you know, Boston sports fan in general. So I'm getting excited for the Bruins Celtics playoff runs coming up. Always this time of year, NFL draft next week too. Just a great, you know, sport time of year. As long as you have teams in the playoffs, I guess. Yeah,
for sure. I mean, the Warriors missed the playoffs for the first time in a while. So that's disappointing for me. But hey, that means the Giants and the A's, mostly the Giants, will be the focus of attention in the Bay Area, which is really what they need right now because they've not started off too hot. But yeah, I'm pumped for everybody to focus on baseball. I've had a pretty weird month. There's a dead rat in my car. Yeah, very cool. And it's in a spot that I cannot get to and I don't want to pay someone to do anything with it. I haven't checked on it in a couple weeks. I hope it's a skeleton at this point, but it's been, that's how my month began. And with Mercury in retrograde, I've finally become a believer because this has been one of the weirdest months of my life. I mean, outside of the rat stuff, like my grandparents got COVID, my mom got in a car crash. Might have to move out of my house in just a few months. It's been really weird. So I'm sort of excited for April to be nearing its conclusion, but I'm always excited to talk about relievers.
Oh yeah. I mean, where is this rat in your car though? Hold on.
It's next to the engine. It's under the hood.
Oh, that, okay. Yeah. That's, yeah. Oh man. That's,
yeah. We got a rat problem at my house. They're all under my house and stuff. And the door, as you would say. Yeah. Except we live pretty close to a reservoir out here in the Bay Area. So there are plenty of coyotes. Like I hear them every night howling, and I would be afraid to let a cat outside. And I don't think I could hold it inside considering my housemates aren't here all the time. We got events all the time. I'd feel bad for a cat, but, Yeah, we definitely have a rat problem. And it, I guess it just snuck up in there and got stuck, because it is really in there. Like, you can barely see it, but you could smell it. There was a couple days where you could really smell it.
That's wild. Yeah. I mean, wow. Yeah. That's a tough, hopefully, you know, we can get through April here. We're almost there. but yeah, there's also, I mean, there's some sad news for us to talk about today as well, unfortunately.
Totally. Yeah. Well, let's get right into it. As everyone knows who's listening, or maybe you don't know, this is a podcast about relievers. So as always, we're going to talk about the injuries and transactions and news across the whole reliever landscape, and then we'll move to our weekly segment, Three Up, Three Down, as we cover the closers rising and falling down or up Rick's ranks, and then we'll hit our main topic, which we're going to help our fantasy listeners out by talking about some early closer stashes, guys, you can go out that will probably be available on your wire, depending on what kind of league you're in, that you can pin some hope on that maybe they'll be the closer at some point this year. But we'll start it off with the news, and Rick hinted at it. The biggest news so far this season, probably for relievers, Robert Stevenson will undergo elbow surgery and will miss the rest of the year. He started the year on the IL with a shoulder injury. And while he was rehabbing, I think it was his first rehab appearance, threw four straight balls and called the trainers out. And that was it. That's all we got from Robert Stevenson. I think we should have just like a 3 second moment of silence starting now. All right. Thank you for showing respect to Robert Stevenson. He was a guy we talked about all offseason. We're really excited for him to get a shot to take over that closer role in Los Angeles. Rick, would you like to pay your respects to the 2024 campaign of Robert Stevenson?
Yeah, I mean, this is, in the words of Pete Fairbanks, this is just an all-encompassing type of suck. sorry, Nick, you can find me if that word is not loud here. But I mean, this is the time and place for it, because I mean, it's, you know, one thing we're losing Stevenson for the year. They haven't announced if it's Tommy John or not. That can obviously be a big difference. If it's just an internal brace surgery, he could return early next season. But if it's Tommy John, I mean, we're talking about late summer of next year. He may never pitch for the Angels at this point, because I don't know. They think it's interesting that the Angels put in a clause. Did you see this? The clause they had in his contract where
you sent it to me.
Yeah. If he misses like 180 days with an elbow injury, then they can get out of that third year. That's, you know, probably going to happen. And, you know, we might not see Stevenson until 2026 at this point. Wow. I don't know. We'll see. It's, you know, now it also, it's like, oh, I guess we have Carlos Estevez is pretty locked in that, you know, bullpen right now, which is kind of, is boring. Yeah. And, you know, I hope he pitches well, but it's just not the type of, you know, excitement that we can have like around Robert Stevenson. Or, you know, maybe if Ben Joyce was pitching well at AAA, that'd be cool too. But there's just really nothing to, you know, Soriano's in the rotation now. Mm-hmm. This is brutal. I do think, I mean, I'm not trying to like take a victory lap on this or anything, but I remember mentioning this a couple times where I just had a feeling that that's just the way that, you know, Stevenson went to the Rays and they're like, yeah, just throw your slider 3 miles per hour harder. Like, I just like, that's just, I think that's why we see a lot of these Rays pitchers end up hurt on, you know, on the IL for long stints, because it's, you know, getting the most out of them in the short term rather than thinking long term. And, you know, as good as Stevenson was the best reliever from June on last year, so the Rays got what they wanted out of it. But unfortunately for Stevenson, I guess, you know, he got paid, he got a payday out of it. So, you know, not the worst case scenario for him either. So, but it's, you know, tough not seeing him pitch this year. He was just so fun down the stretch last year to watch. And yeah, hopefully he can get back to that same level, you know, when he comes back finally.
Yeah, I'll be excited to see him pitch again. But with Carlos Estevez now having little to no competition, does he rise up your ranks at all, or does he stay put because his skills aren't really anything to write home about?
you know, he might a little bit. It's tough to, it's, I guess once everyone is healthy, I guess he can belong above like a Griffin Jacks at this point, who's, you know, in a committee holding on to the, like, just, you know, as an interim closer at best. So, you know, as far as like those guys go, he probably can move above them. But there's still, and he's only had one bad outing so far this year, but it just, the stuff's just not, it's just nothing to get excited about. And
yeah,
I don't know. I still think too, then when we'll see, then Mike Trout's carrying that team right now, see how far he can carry them. But if they don't have any sort of playoff aspirations, Estevez should be moved at the deadline as a free agent to be. So it's not like you're getting necessarily a full season of saves, but there's a lot of guys like that too. So it's hard to, you know, speculate now on that type of thing.
Totally. Yeah. And we'll get into who might take over for him if he ends up struggling. So stay tuned for that later on in the show as we discuss early closer stashes. This will be one of the situations that we've had the littlest time to think about, considering Robert Stevenson was always the guy there to stash, and it never really seemed like anybody else. But now with Stevenson out, you know, there's plenty of options, and we can consider those later on in the show. But we still got some more transactions and injuries to cover. Just one, I'm not even going to call it significant injury. Isaiah Campbell landed on the 15-day IL with a right shoulder impingement. We talked him up a bit in our last episode, and he subsequently got blown up and then injured and landed on the IL with this injury. He was looking like a significant member of this Boston bullpen, mostly because they don't have a ton of trustworthy options that have been around for a long time. But with Isaiah Campbell out, who do you think is rising up the late inning ladder there in Boston?
Yeah, I mean, he was kind of part of that mix. I think right now it's, you know, Martin and Slayton are setting up Kenley Jansen. But, you know, after that, it's a little bit open. Greg, I mean, Weisert's been okay. He really still does struggle against lefties. It's you know, kind of a matchup based thing with him. And, you know, after that, it's, you know, Bernardino is fine from the left side. If it gives him a lefty, he's, I think, a little bit better than Jolly Rodriguez. But yeah, the only two people are really, you know, Slayton is someone who's definitely rising up the board right now. And, you know, Chris Martin, when he's healthy, he's very solid, really hold guy, not really flashy, not a ton of strikeouts, but he's just, you know, great ratios when he's healthy.
Yeah, Slayton's been really good this year. He was their Rule 5 pick, and we talked about him alongside Isaiah Campbell last week, but his three-pitch mix is working really well, and he is first amongst pitchers in MTK percentage, which I mentioned last week too. That's the percentage of pitches that are in the zone and are bad, less than a 4.5 PLV. So basically, you want that number to be low. He has thrown zero bad pitches in the zone. So Justin Slayton seems to have figured something out this year in Boston. So he will be one of the top holds options, at least until Isaiah Campbell comes back. But it'll probably be, you know, a trio with him and Martin.
I think Slayton was already kind of pushing ahead of him.
Yeah.
Campbell and Weiser, they're both, I mean, Campbell is just like, he's kind of, you mentioned Matt Wisler as a comp for someone, but like, this is like, Campbell is kind of Matt Wisler to me, where he just spams that slider, sweeper, whatever, you know, 70-80% of the time. So yeah, I think, you know, he's more of a, I don't know if he's ever going to, you know, Slayton can get both sides out, or Campbell's more of a, you know, situational guy, I feel.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's Isaiah Campbell to the 15-day IL with a right shoulder impingement. We'll move over to our transactions. First one, pretty minor. Adrian Morejon of the Padres was recalled from the minors. I mostly just put him on here because he's an interesting pitcher just in general. He hasn't done much at the major league level to deserve a lot of hype in terms of becoming a potential holds candidate, but we've seen him be a top prospect in the past. He's still just 25 years old, and he's throwing 97 miles per hour after averaging 95 last year on his fastball. So that's pretty interesting. Right now, the Padres bullpen is, somewhat deep on the amongst the high leverage guys. You got Robert Suarez, Wandy Peralta, Aniel De Los Santos, and Yuki Matsui. Two of those guys are already lefties, and they have Tom Cosgrove. So I don't really see Maury Hone climbing up into a holds role, but his abilities to go multiple innings can be valuable in plenty of leagues.
Yeah, he's, more of a long reliever at this point. But yeah, the uptick in velocity is interesting. I was kind of, after the Korea, the Seoul series, I was, made note of his velo increase. And yeah, it's something to keep an eye on. I don't know, there's so many lefties in that bullpen already. It's going to take a while for him to work his way into any sort of setup role, but definitely a name to keep an eye on because there are lefties there, but outside of Matsui, I don't love Peralta, and not a huge fan of Cosgrove either. So, he can move his way up potentially quickly.
Yeah, there's a shot. Moving on, Orion Kerkering of the Phillies was activated from the 15-day IL. I think they had officially stated it was an elbow thing, but everybody knew from the reports that it was an illness that just forced him to stop pitching for a couple of weeks, which set him back. So he wasn't ready for opening day. Start the year on the IL, work your way back up, and now he's back. And I don't think he's going to work his way right into a high leverage role, considering this bullpen might be the deepest in all of baseball with Alvarado, Hoffman, Dominguez, Soto, and Strom all ahead of him. But Kerkering has shown really good stuff. We saw him in the playoffs last year really put his name on the map there. He wasn't super dominant, but just the fact that he didn't blow up as like a super young reliever pitching in his first postseason, I think says a lot about his character as a pitcher on the mound. He's not going to get flustered even as a 23-year-old, and he's got some incredible stuff. Is this a guy you're sort of stashing at this point, waiting for him to become a holds option?
Yeah, and in deeper holds leagues, he's worth a look. I think it's just, there's so many options here in Philadelphia. Hoffman is above him. I think Sir Anthony Dominguez is, right now, above him on the depth chart. So it comes down to, beating out those guys. And then, there's also the lefties with Alvarado, Soto, and Strom. So it's a deep bullpen, but yeah, he's like, especially in like a dynasty league, I guess he's more intriguing because of his age. And there's probably, within the next 2 to 3 years, we could see him closing out games. But yeah, for now, he's definitely an interesting flyer. Just that breaking ball is so insanely good. So yeah, it's someone to keep an eye on, but I don't think he's a must add in holds leagues. I think it depends on how deep your league is.
Yeah, because I feel like the Phillies are probably going to go easy on him. Not only is he 23, but he's not pitched much. He's been injured for a lot of his career. So I find it hard to believe that they would, put him in the eighth inning, put him in the ninth inning, bump up his arbitration price, put him at higher risk of injury or underperformance. I think they want to take it easy on him probably all year. And then maybe start to ramp him up a little bit in September so that he's ready to go when we get to the playoffs. But yeah, I don't see Kerkering being a huge force in the saves plus hold category this year.
Yeah, not now. Maybe second half, though, like you said, like get him ramped up for the playoffs. But probably it could take a while to get there. Yeah.
Our next IL activation is Caleb Thielbar, a lefty for the Twins. He was activated from the 15-day IL after dealing with a hamstring strain. In a corresponding move, the Twins optioned Jorge Alcala to the minors, which was pretty surprising. He started the year off pretty solidly and had been in the past a guy that looked like he was in line to have a lot of high leverage innings. We can start with Thielbar, who has been super consistent over the past few years and almost surprisingly so. If you go back to 2020, he has a 3.21 ERA across 174 innings. And that comes with a strikeout rate of 30.2%. So he's been very dominant and very quietly so, one of the more underrated relievers. And it probably has to do with his age. He's in his age 37 season, but he got a hold in his first day back despite allowing a couple of runs. Is Thielbar a must own in holds leagues with Steven Okert ahead of him?
I don't know. Not right now. Yeah, I still think Okert's got a higher, you know, level hold on that setup role there. You know, I think Thielbar is that second lefty and might take him a while. He's been a little shaky to start, but I, you know, just shaking off some rust. He should be fine. Yeah, he's really been one of the more sneaky, just consistent, steady holds options with, you know, the 30% K rate, good ratios, and, you know, he's always chipped in holds as long as he's been on the roster. So I don't think he's a must, you know, must roster now. We'll see what happens, but he's more of that middle, you know, middle to back end, you know, deep league option.
Totally. And they had to remove Alcala from the roster to allow Thielbar some room. And that was surprising given Alcala pitched to a perfect ERA across 8 1/3 innings to start the year. That came with a strikeout rate north of 30%, which is very interesting considering in his really only full season, 2021, he had a strikeout rate of 26%. So I'm not here to say that this is a new Alcala, that we should expect a guy that's going to have an increased strikeout rate, but we've seen him have success in the past. In 2020, 2.63 ERA across 24 innings, 2021, 3.92 ERA across 59 innings. Not great, but it came with a 21% strikeout minus walk rate because he's got great command and a sub one whip. So super interesting. I expect him to be back at some point. They're probably just trying to take it easy on him because they see him as a guy that should contribute significantly to the bullpen down the stretch. And you got plenty of guys on the roster that you can look at right now, like Matt Bowman and Jay Jackson are probably not going to be around in August, but Alcala will. So definitely keep an eye on him for when he returns, because I think he could take a significant role in this bullpen right away.
Yeah, it's definitely a long-term outlook for the Twins here. That's the only thing I can think of, because, yeah, he looked great. It's, you know, he's a guy who's had injury concerns in the past. So, yeah, they just want to keep him healthy and, you know, fresh for the second half of the year, I'd imagine. Because, yeah, they do have, and even they have like Staumont and Topa coming back. They have, you know, a lot of interesting names here. So it's probably going to be, you know, between the back, you know, three or four, you know, options in this bullpen, we might get, you know, guys moving up and down AAA. So I'm sure we'll see Alcala again at some point, not too far away. But yeah, keep an eye on him if he gets consistent, you know, consistent chances there.
Yeah. All right, let's move to Toronto, where the Blue Jays made a couple of moves we've been waiting for them to do. They activated Jordan Romano from the 15-day IL after he dealt with elbow inflammation, and they also activated Eric Swanson from the 15-day IL after he had started the season on the IL with forearm tightness. And in a corresponding move, the most significant one, Nate Pearson was optioned to the minors. We'll start with Romano, who got a save in his first day back. So it looks like, despite Yimi Garcia having a lot of success during his brief stint as the top arm in that bullpen, it looks like Romano is just going to be slotted right back into that closer role. Do you have any concerns with him, considering he did allow a run in that inning and he's coming off, you know, not the nicest injury? Elbow inflammation is a little bit scary, and he's not been as dominant as he was in, you know, his first couple of years as the closer. I don't know. What's your concern level with Romano right now, or is there no concern?
Nothing right now, but it is worth, you know, keeping an eye on here, because, yeah, like you said, he has, I mean, since the second half of last year, it seems like his stuff's kind of dipped a little bit. I do, you know, he was dealing with some injuries late last year around the All-Star break, and then, you know, now this elbow thing before the season even starts. You know, the first outing I'm not too concerned with. That's probably just rust, you know, trying to shake off some rust there. But yeah, worth keeping an eye on. I think in the landscape right now of a bunch of injuries going on, he's still a top 10 option. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how he holds up. You know, Yimi Garcia has been fantastic so far, and they have plenty of options in that bullpen when they're at full strength. So we'll see. I mean, Swanson didn't look much better when he finally debuted the next day.
Was that today?
That was yesterday, I believe. Swanson pitched.
Why am I not? I need to reload my roster resource page. I was wondering why things were looking so hard. There we go. Well, speaking of other good options in that bullpen, like you said, Eric Swanson returned. Didn't look too great. Do you think they're going to wait for him to look like old Eric Swanson before they install him into the eighth inning? Or do you think this is just like, all right, Yimi, you're into a high leverage role, and Eric Swanson, you're back into your usual eighth inning role?
Yeah, I think that should be at least what they, that should be the plan, I would imagine, is, you know, Swanson gets the eighth, and then you got, you know, Yimi and Chad Green can, you know, sixth and seventh, whatever situation pops up, they can, you know, manage there, which gives them really, I mean, that's a really good, you know, group of, you know, relievers. If you have a starter that's only going four innings, which, you know, maybe someone like Kikuchi doesn't go terribly deep into games every now and then. So, I think they're going to give Swanson a little bit of leash here after the first outing. Again, probably just rust. The stuff, you know, the velo looked fine. Nothing really jumped off the page as being like totally off with Swanson. So, yeah, chalk it up to rust, and we'll give him another couple weeks before we, you know, really start to panic.
Sure. Yeah, they threw him right into a save situation in his season debut, not trying to use Jordan Romano on back-to-back day. So I think that is suggestive of the fact that he is their number two option, despite how good Yimi Garcia has been to start the year. But counterpoint there, Garcia had pitched in back-to-back days prior to that, so maybe he would have been the top option there. I think this is still a situation to watch, and either of those guys could be the eighth inning guy, and probably both of them should be rostered in the majority of holds leagues.
Yeah, I'd say so. Pretty much. I both have them as top 20 holds options. I think, yeah, even with Swanson last year and Garcia as well, they weren't necessarily, you know, fixated on which one of those guys pitched, you know, what inning or whatnot. Mm-hmm. It's definitely more matchup based. So, you know, depending on certain pockets and all that, you know, Swanson with his splitter is able to get out lefties better than, you know, Yimi Garcia with his curveball fastball mix. So, yeah, I think it's just going to come down to matchups with those two.
And then Nate Pearson was the one who was replaced on the roster, which I'm upset about because I've been waiting to see Nate Pearson really have a full season. Last year was his biggest sample size, and it was just 42 frames. And it sort of makes sense given the Blue Jays have a ton of options in that bullpen and a lot of trustworthy, good options. Both Genesis Carrera and Tim Meza have not started the year off too well, so they could have been sent out, but they're the team's only two lefties in the bullpen. So I guess Pearson was the odd man out there. He still has one more option, which that sucks. So they could do this again. He started the year off with a zero ERA across six and a third, and he struck out 34% of the batters he faced. So Pearson was looking really interesting, and I'm excited to see what he can do when he returns. Wasn't he sporting a new splitter?
I don't know if he ever threw it, but there was talk of him, I think, in spring. Yeah, but he still just had the slider curveball combo. Mm-hmm. Both solid pitches, and he throws, you know, upper 90s. He does belong in a major league bullpen. It's just this bullpen's pretty deep at the moment. So similar to Alcala, it's, you know, let's see where he's at, you know, second half of the year. They might be just, you know, taking it easy with him for now. And I'm sure he'll be playing a big fact, you know, big part of this bullpen in the, you know, second half of the year.
Yeah, especially next year, too. Once he becomes arbitration eligible, I feel like he'll be, you know, a top holds option. But we're going to have to wait for that. That's Nate Pearson. And we can move over to Forrest Whitley, who was recalled from the minors and then promptly optioned back to the minors after pitching in just one game. Did you see anything in his short appearance to get you intrigued? Or is this just like a leftover prospect type that's allowing for Whitley to be a name despite really not doing anything ever to suggest that he should deserve our attention?
I mean, there might be something here. Yeah, I mean, he's throwing a sinker at 97 miles per hour from, you know, his frame. Cutter at 91.5 miles per hour, you know, mixes in a splitter as well. There's some interesting pieces there. It'll be interesting. And again, this is another name that we probably see. We're definitely going to see again at some point this summer for the Astros. And with the way that their, you know, bullpen's pitching right now, there's, you know, certainly a possibility he works his way into a whole, you know, situation. But I don't think, you know, again, just a name to monitor in deep holds leagues, but nothing really worth chasing at this point.
All right. And lastly, we've got Luke Little of the Cubs, who's optioned to the minors. Surprisingly, he started the year off pretty well. And another move in association with that for the Cubs was Julian Merriweather moving to the 60-day IL. I'm trying to remember what his injury was.
So the rib, he had that like rib stress fracture.
Yeah, in his back.
Yeah.
So we won't see him back until June something at the earliest. So it's going to be a while till we see Julian Merriweather, and he'll probably need some time to build up too. Mm-hmm. It's probably going to be a mid-June type of thing. But Luke Little going down was really interesting. His strikeout and walk numbers were not great. 5 walks, 5 strikeouts, and 6 2/3. But his stuff looked really good, and he pitched to a 2.70 ERA. Is Luke Little somebody that you were surprised to see go down? Or, I don't know, what's your read on this situation?
Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit.
It's similar to like Alcala and Pearson and these younger guys with options still, who, mm-hmm. I mean, they belong in a major league bullpen, but they have options and they can be patient with them. He's probably, I think Smiley's been fine out of the bullpen, but Little's still probably their best lefty. Mm-hmm. The playoffs and for, you know, just getting into the playoffs down the stretch and the end of summer, I'm sure they're going to want Little, you know, in that bullpen healthy. And I'm sure, yeah, we'll see him again. And yeah, he's a name to keep an eye on because, you know, throwing 98 from the left side, pretty good sweeper. He hasn't really fully, you know, tapped into that potential yet, but there's definitely a big time really like setup guy, possibly closer down the road there with Luke Little.
Yeah, I see a little bit why. Oh my God, I did it. I see why they did it. Because they're running a 6-man rotation with a couple of young guys in there, Wicks, Assad, and Brown, who aren't likely to go a lot of innings. Shota Imanaga is also on like the 6-day schedule. That's why they got the 6-man rotation. Jameson Taillon just returned, and so he's probably going to have his innings limited. And Kyle Hendricks isn't pitching well enough to go more than a couple of innings. So I get why they wanted to go to Colton Brewer and Hayden Wesneski and Keegan Thompson to try to have some bulk out of the bullpen. And Luke Little, while he was a former starting pitching prospect, he's been a reliever for the last few stops he's had throughout the minors. So I think he's not going to provide the depth that maybe they wanted out of the bullpen. So their other options make a lot of sense there. But that's the transactions and news from the past week. Next, we're going to talk about the closers rising and falling up and down Rick's ranks. But first, we're going to take a quick break here on In the Pen.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen talking about relievers. We have entered the three up, three down segment. We'll start it off with the closers rising up Rick's ranks. First off, Kirby Yates of the Rangers. He has looked really good this year, has yet to allow a run. And in a time where the Rangers closer role is in flux, looks like Yates is going to be the one to take over there.
Yeah, he's been so good so far, too. I mean, the last 2 days coming in, getting four outs in both back-to-back games, getting a win in the first one, a save in the second one. I mean, for everyone who, you know, went out and added him this past weekend and threw a lot of fab money at him, congrats. You're getting a huge return on your investment so far. And yeah, there's no reason to think that he would be giving up this role anytime soon. Even, you know, Leclerc's been pitching a lot better since he got removed from the role, the closer role. But again, there's no reason. Leclerc wasn't, you know, attached to that role. There's no reason to go back now. I think this is, you know, Yates' role for the foreseeable future. It's going to be up to him to really lose it. So, you know, the great thing here is that his walk rate's down from last year. That was really the only concern with him coming into the season, is he walked 16.2% of batters last year, something like that. It was really high. And that's, you know, that can definitely happen time to time with, you know, a splitter guy, because, you know, a good splitter is not going to be in the strike zone. It's going to be getting hitters to chase. So, yeah, but, you know, 98 percentile chase rate right now. And, he's definitely, you know, got the splitter fastball combo working.
Totally. Yeah. And you mentioned the walks are really the only concern. I think for me, the only concern is that he's 37, which for closers, they can sort of fend that off for a while because they're pitching in such small bursts. And I'm not actively concerned about him being old, but there is, you know, that itch in the back of my brain where it's, oh no, when is Kirby Yates' arm going to fall off? I mean, we know he's sort of just like a year return or a year removed from Tommy John surgery, a couple years removed. And, while his stuff looks basically the same it's looked since 2019, there's a part of me that's a little bit concerned, but he has looked really good thus far, is in the closer role, has been going more than just three outs as well. And I think everything looks really good thus far.
And back to back days. That's kind of what blows my mind, you know, this early in the year, them willing to go, you know, I was kind of following along with that game earlier today. I'm like, what are they going to do? What are they going to do in the eighth and ninth inning? There's no way they're going to go to Yates again. Is that going to happen? And I just, you know, it seems a little aggressive this early in the year, but maybe they're just, you know, willing to take what they can with Yates. And, you know, this seems, I'm sure they're going to add someone at the deadline as well. So it's another thing to keep an eye on. But, you know, for now, like the Rangers are going to do, just, you know, ride it out with Yates and, you know, just enjoy it for as long as it lasts.
Yeah, and we know Bruce Bochy loves himself some veterans. He turned to Will Smith and Aroldis Chapman for most of last year until September when Jose Leclerc took over. Maybe that'll be the case this year. Maybe Yates will survive the whole year and be one of the surprise closers for the season. And we can move on to Craig Kimbrell, as it seems to be the year of the veteran closer, as Kimbrell has been incredible this year. He's walked nobody in seven innings while striking out a ton of guys. Definitely a good combo there. He's been looking really good. The only concern here is that his fastball velocity has been down 2 miles per hour. But when I dove into it last weekend when I was writing the reliever ranks, I noticed that despite the decreased velocity, he's still sporting a 99th percentile PLV. And it's not just the PLV number, which is a sort of like a, I don't know, you look at that and it's like a nebulous stat. You're not like, oh, well, like maybe it's got good shape and he's throwing it well and he's not having good results. He's also having good results. 83rd percentile swinging strike rate, 88th percentile CSW. It's been looking really good. The ICR is really high, but the thing is with Kimbrel is I think I realized when I was writing this up that he's not so reliant on velocity or stuff. It's more so his control. And when he gets into those bouts of not doing well, it's usually because his mechanics are off, which leads to bad control. And either that means yanking the curveball out of the zone or not being able to land the four seamer where he wants to, or just straight up serving up meatballs, which I think has always been his biggest bugaboo, is the home runs. And so far, no home runs, which, you know, very lucky, but I think that's because he's got great control over his stuff right now.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. And you know, the control, the command, his curveball and fastball. It's the funny, he's got a 52% K rate and he's still not getting guys to chase. You know, chase rate's only at 25.9%, it's 36th percentile. But he's been around the zone more. And like you mentioned, his velo, and that was a concern for me last week, and I dropped him a lot. And then, you know, I heard him talk about how he's, you know, he can ramp it up whenever he wants to. He's just, you know, kind of easing himself into the year, trying to make it through the full season. And in one of his last outings, he threw a pitch. He did touch 97. So like, that's still in the tank when he needs to get back, you know, when he needs to reach back and get there, he can get there. So, yeah, if he's able to, you know, if he doesn't need to throw 97 every night to have these type of results, obviously that's great. That's awesome. But, you know, it's a little bit more reassuring that just knowing he does have that in the tank when he needs to get there. So, yeah, there's really no complaints from Kimbrel this year. And yeah, I remember when we were talking about him, either when he signed or just I think it was when he signed where, you know, there's a lot of hard contact here, but he's going to a very pitcher friendly park, you know, especially in left field. So there's just a really good fit for him here, and it's really paying off for the Orioles right now.
Yeah. And I like that strategy of him taking it easy now, because we saw last year him run out of gas and really struggle down the stretch. And we weren't sure what it was, but it was pretty clear that throwing the most innings of your career in a long time is going to have a negative impact on your performance on the field. And that's what we saw with Kimbrel last year. So I like that he's sort of pacing himself now. The Orioles are going to be relying on him through October likely. So it's smart for him to save some bullets for later. And we'll wrap up the moving up section for your closing time article with James MacArthur of the Royals, who has taken over the role in Kansas City with Will Smith struggling early on. MacArthur has taken over the same role that he held last year when he finished the year really strong. And all of his pitches have looked really strong this year. The curveball is getting a lot of swinging strikes and swings out of the zone, while the sinker comes in and steals strikes with a 83rd percentile called strike rate. And then the slider does exactly what the curveball does and just gets a ton of swinging strikes. 91st percentile, 27% swinging strike rate there, 96th percentile CSW. So all of his stuff is looking really good. And it feels like with the number of swing strikes that he's getting that he could strike out more batters than we saw him do last year and has already done this year, because he's got a swinging strike rate of 17% overall, and yet he only has a 28% strikeout rate. I think generally it's like a times two swinging strike rate equals strikeout rate. Isn't that like one of those, you know,
bad
math things?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think there's 30% strikeout rate in his arm, but yeah, we have yet to see it. And he's maintained his really good command, which I don't know. To me, he's got like he doesn't have the same stuff and he's not the same guy at all, but he's got George Kirby vibes.
Yeah, I get that a little bit. You know, elite command, but he does have swing and miss. You know, Kirby relies a little bit more on his fastball, where you know, MacArthur really relies on that curveball, which is, it's been a fantastic pitch for the past 2 years for him. And that's his primary. The sinker does get hit around, and that's the one concern is the hard contact he allows. But, you know, that's going to happen with a guy who doesn't, you know, isn't able to throw with elite velocity. But the sinker's still fine. Does a job for him, and I think, you know, there's no other competition here at this point. Mm-hmm. I don't think Stratton's any sort of competition. Maybe Schreiber, but again, he's not really a closer type reliever. So until, you know, unless they move, make a move for somebody at the deadline, I think this is MacArthur's job for the foreseeable future. And I think he should be pretty safe in that role, despite the hard contact. He's just, you know, the command, the low rock rate really, you know, helps keep him, you know, from having massive, you know, major blowups like some of these other relievers who have big rock walk rates and then they let up a home run. If MacArthur, it's just going to be like one or two runs an outing probably. And yeah, he should be pretty safe in that role.
Yeah, it feels like a really safe option with the hint of upside, which gives me the George Kirby vibes where it's like he hasn't realized the potential, but you can see it. It's like clearly there, but you'll take what he's given us already. And that's safety in the closer role.
39.3% CSW so far, 17% swinging strike rate. I mean, that's above average for sure. So, yeah, there's the 30% strikeout arm here. Either way, you should be getting, you know, pretty good ERA and, you know, a good amount of strikeouts with a bunch of save opportunities for a Royals team that when they do win games, I imagine they're going to be pretty close scoring games.
Yeah, and they've been pretty good this year. So hopefully that'll provide James MacArthur with plenty of opportunities. But as closers rise up the ranks, closers have to fall down the ranks to accommodate them. The first one we have is Jose Alvarado, a lefty for the Phillies. He just got a save yesterday, but he struggled to a 5.40 ERA this year, despite getting the most saves in that bullpen. He just has not looked like the same pitcher that he has been for the last few years. I'm not quite sure what it is. Do you have any insight on why he hasn't looked quite as dominant?
I also am not entirely sure what's going on here.
The walk rate,
that's, you know, been a thing with him. But he's not missing bats at all with any of his pitches, and it's not, the velo's down like a very small amount, nothing too concerning. It's just, you know, the walk rate and the fact that he's not able to get swings and misses anymore. It's weird. I would have to look. It's got to be, maybe it's a shape thing, because he, you know, if you look at the stuff plus numbers for all the active, you know, 30 active closers, he's dead last at 95.
What?
Yeah, he's behind Kyle Finnegan.
No way, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's also, you know, I'm pretty sure stuff plus is kind of, negative towards sinker. Because sinker ballers, I mean, Jason Foley's second to last at 100.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, I think it's like a sinker baller skewed thing. But it's also early. I know this kind of, you know, stabilizes quickly, but I'm still a little bit, you know, skeptical on some of these. Because, you know, anyway, back to Alvarado. I there's got to be something weird with how the pitches are coming out, or I mean, he's not really locating his sinker well at all. The cutter at least looks fairly similar to what it was last season, but the sinker is just not really doing much at the moment. So I don't know. It should be fine. You know, the other concern there is that they're really sticking to that closer by committee approach. Mm-hmm. It's not going away. I thought maybe, you know, Alvarado could just run with this job. You know, he's so good, you know, at least like from what we saw at the beginning of last season. You know, if he does that again, he's probably just going to be the closer for the entire year. But, you know, we've seen Hoffman in the ninth inning a lot. You know, Soto had a save. I'm sure we'll see Sir Anthony Domingo's or Kirkering also factor into some saves. So, yeah, they're not sticking with him as the full-time closer there, and that's the other, you know, the other part of this. Yeah.
Yeah, another situation where we're seeing a closer by committee is in Milwaukee, where Abnu Uribe was a popular waiver wire ad early in the season as he notched 3 saves across the first week. And then since then, just radio silence. He's pitched, but there have been large gaps between his appearances, and he's not been pitching in the ninth inning. We saw him not pitch for 3 days after he got those 3 saves in his first 3 appearances. And then he allowed 2 runs in his next outing. And then he'd go four more days until his next appearance and was used in a 4-run lead in the ninth. And then I think most recently, which was 4 days after the previous outing, he pitched the seventh and blew the team's 1-run lead. I think he pitched one more time. He's pitched twice since then. And one time was in the eighth. And then the other time was, I can't remember. But the point is, Abner Uribe has not been used as the closer and has not pitched like he did in the first week when he looked absolutely dominant. And I mean, this is expected. He's a very young pitcher with incredible stuff and terrible command. So there's going to be times where he's not throwing strikes or maybe batters are laying off and he's going to struggle. But it shows that despite the usage early on in the season, the Brewers aren't set on just locking Abner Uribe into the closer role. And I think that's why both of us were so surprised that first week, because it seemed so ahead of schedule and they still had other options there. And Devin Williams was due back at some point. That seemed weird to use Uribe like that. So I think now that we know Uribe's not the outright closer and might not even be the favorite for saves going forward, there's a lot up in the air. I think Yoel Piamps, who got the team's most recent save, is still an option in plenty of leagues, despite not pitching as well as he did last year. And then Trevor Megill, who should be back at some point, fingers crossed, hopefully, he's also got a shot there. But how are you feeling about Abner Uribe after the last couple of weeks?
If Trevor Megill is not back tomorrow or today, when you're listening to this podcast on Friday, April 19th, I would have some concern, because he's... Yeah, he should be back tomorrow. I think he's going to be the closer for this weekend and moving forward. Uribe, it's just weird. Huh? It's not surprising to me, because I felt like he shouldn't be the closer right now.
Yeah.
But it's just like he didn't really do anything to lose the job necessarily either. So I don't know why, like, the second, like, all of a sudden they're just moving off of him from the ninth inning. I mean, yeah, it started with him pitching in the seventh inning one game and then the fourth inning the other day. And I was like, what is going on in the fourth inning? So, yeah, he still isn't, he's like a, Brewster Gratterall, but better when it comes to swing and miss. And I mean, I don't even know if it's better. He only has a 7.6% swing strike rate and, 10% K to walk. It's like, obviously the stuff's crazy good. It's just commanding. He's not going to, get to his full potential until he's able to command it better. And right now he's just throwing it and hoping for the best.
Yeah, definitely. So I think both of us are not out on Uribe as a reliever. Like, we're not both like, oh, well, see, he couldn't handle being the closer role, so he's never going to be a closer. I think the Brewers are just doing some weird stuff right now, and Uribe is probably a little bit too young and unpolished to really hold down that closer role as the guy until Devin Williams returns. So there's definitely a lot of opportunity here with Piamps and Megill in that bullpen. But we can wrap up this section with Tanner Scott, who's been very confounding this year as he's struggled mightily. The walks are back to an incredible amount, 27% walk rate across 8.2 innings. How many walks is that? So much walks. That's 12 walks. Wow, that's so many walks. And I'll let you take over and explain to everybody why Tanner Scott's been so confounding this year.
Yeah, so I think I'll start with saying I just wanted to talk about him, so that's why I put him on this list. Because, we do have to talk about him, because it's been, like you said, confounding. It's we got to figure out what's going on here. What do we do with this guy? But, it's only been 2 weeks, first of all. This is a top three, maybe five, top three to five reliever in all of baseball last year. The stuff is still there. Grid stuff plus, numbers. There's no competition for him in this bullpen, at least. That's another, big factor for holding on to Scott is, Anthony Bender's probably the next guy in line, but he has not been great. His velo's down from where it used to be. And I honestly don't think Scott has pitched that poorly. And I mean, I've been beating the drum for Scott like all winter long, and I will admit when I'm wrong, but I think he's going to be okay. Like I think he just needs to make a little bit of an adjustment, because it's the walk rate does look terrible. It's like, oh, we're back to the old Tanner Scott, but he actually, he has a 42% zone rate and a 61.5% first pitch strike rate, which are both, good for 14th highest are good for 14th amongst, you know, 30 active closers. So middle of the pack as far as zone rate goes. Hitters are just not swinging against him, like, at all. They're not swinging at him. A pitch is in the zone. 37% swing rate against them is the second lowest among all closers right now. So yeah, hitters are just not swinging against him, and he hasn't made an adjustment yet where, you know, he's getting ahead with that first pitch strike still, but then he's trying to get hitters to chase and they're not, you know, they're not really biting yet. So, I think he just needs to be a little bit more aggressive, trust his stuff, just be confident and challenge hitters. And, he should be fine. I mean, the stuff's still there. It's great. It gets swings and misses when he's, you know, around the zone. It's just, you know, trust your stuff, man. I think he'll be fine. I'm going to give it another couple weeks and then we'll see what happens. But, you know, obviously he's dipping down the board, dipping down the ranks a little bit, but like nothing. I haven't got him outside of the top 15 yet.
Yeah. Yeah. It feels like the book is out on him after last year.
Yeah.
Because last year he was like a very different pitcher. So I think teams realize, oh, hey, just like hitters don't swing at his stuff. Yeah. Don't swing at his stuff. Let him get into his trouble. And we've seen, like you said, all the stats that you mentioned, but his swing strike rate is down to 8.4%, which is a 10% drop, just a massive drop. And it's because nobody's swinging. 15% right. Less often they're swinging. Doesn't matter whether it's in the zone or not. And while his zone rate is down slightly, it's about where it was before last year. He's at 42%, and last year he was at 48% in terms of throwing pitches in the zone. So yeah, I mean, maybe he just needs to trust his stuff more, throw it more 50% of the time in the zone, and just, you know, let it play, because I don't think he's getting destroyed on his pitches more often than he used to. I don't even think anyone's touched his four seamer yet. It doesn't even have a ICR rate.
Yeah. His called strike percentage is, you know, top 10 amongst closers at 20%. It's just, yeah, I think, like you said, like hitters have adjusted. Now it's time for him to readjust. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's baseball.
Passivity.
That's what baseball is. It's, yeah, hitters make adjustments and the pitcher, it's just back and forth. And now, yeah, I think I don't think it's necessarily like a, you know, mechanical thing, or I think it's just like a, yeah, like a, an approach thing really with them.
So are you buying low on Tanner Scott?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't, you know, I think you can get him for pretty much dirt cheap right now. And if that's the case, if you can get him for next to nothing, sure. If it's someone you're about to drop, if you can trade for him, sure. I know I've seen, it's been in the Discord, there's been a lot of people who've already moved on from Scott and people asking, like, do I pick him up and drop, you know, Jose Leclerc or whoever? I'm like, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's worth a shot. Let's, you know, it's 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks into the season. You know, closers are a little bit different, I feel like, from like hitters or even starting pitchers, where, you know, I feel like it just, people get really anxious right away with these guys if they're not performing. And, you know, you might only see 50 innings from these guys. So if, you know, once you're at 10 innings, that's, you know, a fifth of the season and kind of a sample size to look at. So I know.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, I understand wanting to move on, but I'm going to hold out hope. I'm going to hold on, and I don't know if I'm going to go looking for him in trades in other leagues, but I'm hoping for the best here and just hoping he can make an adjustment and, you know, get back on track, cuz the stuff's still there. He's still in a good situation. He's you know, not losing his role anytime soon, I don't think so. You know, that home run he let up to Ozuna was not the worst pitch. It wasn't a great 0-2 pitch. It was out of the zone at his knees. It was just a good piece of hitting. That's going to happen to good hitters every now and then. It seems to compound, you know, when you're not pitching well altogether. You know, the one time you do make kind of a good pitch, the guy hits it out. But yeah, I think he'll get out of this, and I think he'll figure it out and turn it around.
Yeah, I think I'm on the same page. Just like looking at the stats and seeing such obvious reasons for his struggles makes it a lot easier to believe that that will turn around. But those are the closers rising and falling in Rick's ranks. We got Kirby Yates, Craig Kimbrell, and James MacArthur climbing up the ranks, while Jose Alvarado, Abner Uribe, and Tanner Scott are falling down the ranks. You mentioned the Discord. So for those listening that haven't already, go sign up for PL Plus or PL Pro. Great way to experience PitcherList, the website, and to get access to PitcherList staff and the rest of the PitcherList community. You can go on there and you can have conversations with Rick directly about relievers, and then maybe catch me somewhere every once in a while in the Discord. But yeah, totally worth it, because that's just one of the perks. Go sign up for PL Plus or PL Pro. Next, we're going to talk about early closer stashes for fantasy baseball. But first, we're going to take our second break of the podcast here on In the Pen.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen talking relievers. We are entering our discussion regarding early closer stashes, as this is the time of the year where, you know, you've waited a little. We've got some stats. We've got some numbers. We got some ideas about how bullpens are shaking out. And it allows us to identify the guys that not only have the best shot at becoming a closer, but are the guys that you would want to be a closer. So we can start off with who I think should be the number one guy you're owning if you're looking for a guy that's going to take over a closer role. Incredible stuff. Pretty good situation. Hunter Harvey has always been somebody that this podcast is a fan of. And with Kyle Finnegan ahead of him, there's definitely a clear path to a closer role. Finnegan has yet to blow up, but you never know with him. And Hunter Harvey, meanwhile, has looked dominant with a 3.12 ERA across 8.2 innings and a 41.5% strikeout rate. And I think the most notable thing is 2.4% walk rate. He's always been a pretty decent walk rate guy, but that combination of 41% strikeout rate and 2% walk rate is mind blowing.
Yeah. I mean, this is the best we've probably seen Harvey. And it's unfortunate I mean, Kyle Finnegan's been pitching okay. He's had back-to-back solid outings. So, you know, as far as his, you know, trust in that closer role goes, he's probably not a risk to lose the job anytime soon. But I mean, Harvey's just been pitching so good. And they've been using him in multiple, you know, not just for a winning, they've been using him for four outs a lot, which is great to see. It's definitely something you want from a closer, as we saw, Kirby Yates recently. I don't want to say need, but you really want your closer to be able to, you know, get that last out in the eighth inning if you need to. Mm-hmm.
Yates is a great comparison, as they're both splitter guys.
It's just like Harvey's stuff is just like on steroids compared to like Yates. He's able to throw 98. The splitter is probably not as good, but it's still a really good, you know, it's been doing some, you know, good work this year with a 46% whiff rate. Lefties are really having trouble against it, which is, you know, splitter is always going to be tougher against the opposite hand hitter. I want to see Harvey. I want to see him in the closer role. I think it's a matter of time. I think it will happen. It's just, you know, be patient with him. I think you can. It's safe to you know, stash him in 12 teamers right now. He's probably the one. There might be another, you know, couple guys in this list that you would say you can stash in 12 teamers at this point. Harvey's definitely, you know, near the top of that list.
Totally. And then in Milwaukee, which we talked about a little bit, Trevor McGill has been on the 7-day concussion IL for longer than 7 days, which is concerning, not only because it's a head injury, a brain injury, but also because he's been out for a little longer than we expected, which is not great. But I'm hoping he comes back, because there does seem to be a pretty clear opening to the closer role right now. And maybe it would still be a closer committee with Payam Uribe and McGill. And that's sort of how I felt like it was even during the first week when Uribe was getting all the saves. It still felt like it was a committee situation, but not one that would provide McGill many opportunities, like maybe a save every other week. But with things as they are right now, there's a shot he could be getting the majority of the saves if he returns successfully and, you know, gets comfortable pretty quickly.
He should be. I really hope. I mean, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm guessing he's back this weekend. He's, you know, he's had a couple rehab appearances and he's looked fine. You know, I think he's ready to go here. Now, you know, obviously coming into a situation that's a little bit different from when he went on the IL with Uribe status being unknown, or, you know, I don't think they love Payam in the ninth inning. I think they're okay with it, but McGill just feels right in the closer role. I hope it happens. You know, I think you need to pick him up this weekend or tomorrow or today, I guess, if it's Friday when you're listening to this. If he's still available, it's worth a shot, because, you know, if he gets a save Friday night, it might be too late at that point. Mm-hmm. So you want to always be a little, you know, ahead of the game when it comes to speculating on closers, unless you want to spend a ton of fab on him. So, yeah, let's see. Hopefully he, you know, returns this weekend, looks good, gets the save, and then we're off.
Yeah, just don't forget how good he was last year. 35% strikeout rate in 34 innings last year while throwing 100 miles per hour from a guy that's 6'8". So, as you have said many times, very Felix Bautista-esque there with Trevor McGill. So hopefully he gets a shot in Milwaukee. Move over to Jeff Hoffman, who is interesting mostly because, you know, traditional closers, they're right-handed. And the top option right now in Philadelphia is Jose Alvarado, a lefty. But on top of that, Alvarado, who we talked about falling down the ranks on the closer list, he has not been at his best this year. He's not been getting swing strikes. His ERA is a little inflated. And while he's gotten the most save opportunities, Jeff Hoffman's right behind him. He's gotten a save already. He seems to be like the next option. So I feel like if Alvarado were to be replaced, it would probably be Hoffman. And he was really good last year. 33% strikeout rate, 2.41 ERA in 52 innings. He pitched in the playoffs. Just a guy that has suddenly become somebody that's very trustworthy in that bullpen. And I think while we're here, we might as well just pair Sir Anthony Dominguez with Hoffman. He was formerly the closer here. He's another right-hander, so he's one of their top options. I don't want to say he's got more potential than Hoffman, but we've seen the heights Sir Anthony Dominguez can reach, and they are pretty spectacular. So those are a couple options in the Phillies bullpen. Do you have a preference over those two, or do you have a specific reason why you name those guys?
Yeah, I mean, Hoffman right now seems to be getting a lot of ninth inning work. If it's not Alvarado, it's been Hoffman pretty much. Little bit, you know, he doesn't have the same magic or you know, hype that we had from him last season right now. Maybe it's because the velo's down a little bit. But still very much interested in Hoffman. Save plus holds leagues, definitely, definitely worth a look. Sir Anthony is one that I wasn't sure he was able to. I don't really have a ton of faith in him being able to bounce back this season. Just based on some of the underlying stuff from last year. But, you know, now a full year removed from, you know, missing most of 2021, was it? Or 2 years removed, I guess. He does look a little bit better despite what the numbers might say with the 6.43 ERA. It looks like his swing and miss stuff's come back a little bit. So I'm not totally out on him. I do like Hoffman a little bit better, but I think Sir Anthony is not worth, you know, I wouldn't write him off just yet. He's a guy we've seen close out games for them in the past and be pretty good at it. And he's still only 29. It's not like this guy's, you know, in his mid 30s, late 30s. He's still pretty young. So he's still able to throw 98. So, I like Hoffman a little bit more than Sir Anthony right now, but both names to keep an eye on. And I think Hoffman is one of those guys in 12 teamers where, you know, maybe if you have an extra roster spot, you don't really know what to do. It's worth, you know, holding on to Hoffman because he even, you know, he's already got a save. He might get another save, you know, one or two saves every, you know, now and then. So worth a look.
Yeah. And then we got a pair of guys again here in Seattle. Both of them are injured, but Gregory Santos and Matt Brash are both interesting. Santos is recovering from a lat injury while Brash is recovering from an elbow injury. Brash has probably, I don't know, maybe the best stuff we've ever seen.
Yeah.
I mean, watching him, it's like, it's not even like a video game. It's like he is literally throwing wiffle balls. His sliders and curveballs and fastballs are ridiculous. And, you know, it's just the injuries holding him back right now. And we've seen in the Seattle bullpen that despite Andrés Muñoz being like the clear top guy here and, you know, pretty much being named the closer, he's not been the outright closer. He does have two saves. He's pitched to a 2.45 ERA, striking out a lot of guys. He's being used in high leverage, but Ryan Stanek, same amount of saves as him. Taylor Saucedo got the most recent save. So there's no indicator here that Andrés Muñoz is going to be strict ninth inning usage. Maybe that changes when Brash and Santos come back and they have more elite options that they can use before the ninth inning, right? And that allows them to lock Muñoz into the ninth. Or maybe it's one of those guys that are locked into the ninth and Muñoz is allowed to roam as a high leverage guy. But both of these guys are really good. Brash, like I said, maybe the most incredible stuff we've ever seen, while Santos is like a Jason Foley, Brusdar Graterol prototype, a guy with a heavy sinker that throws really hard but doesn't get a lot of strikeouts.
No, but his slider does get more swings and misses. His slider is a little bit more intriguing. But yeah, it's like one of two things are going to happen when Brash and Santos return. And Brash should be back fairly soon, like within the next 2 weeks, hopefully. Mm-hmm. Santos, we're probably looking at May, maybe early June. But when they return, you know, either Muñoz is going to go back to being the ninth inning guy only, or we're going to start seeing, you know, Brash is going to take over for Ryan Stanek, and, you know, Stanek's not going to get those two saves that he got recently. It's going to be Brash or it's going to be Santos. So,
yeah.
Either way, especially with Brash, it's like, you know, kind of a no brainer that he's, you know, rosterable as long as he's, you know, healthy. He's just a ton of strikeouts and the occasional save here and there. And maybe a win if they do use him in more of a high leverage role, then, you know, wins are on the table as well. So, you know, Santos, again, like not the preferred option of the two, but Santos is a very, you know, intriguing arm there with the slider and sinker. I think even as well as Stanek's pitch this year, I like Brash and Santos better than him. And even Gabe Spear as the top lefty there. I think if this bullpen gets healthy, it's going to be obviously a huge strength for them. And, you know, they'll need it with, you know, the lack of offense they're getting right now.
Yep. And then we can move over to the Bronx, where Clay Holmes has been very good as the closer this year. Leads baseball with seven saves. He's got a perfect ERA in nine innings, but he's looking like Clay Holmes, you know, the sinker slider guy who doesn't strike out a lot of guys, is a great reliever, but maybe not the ideal candidate for being a closer. I'm not suggesting that Holmes is going to start being bad going forward, but if he were to be bad or if he were to get injured, Ian Hamilton would seem to be the next man up, and he's looked really strong this year with a 2.61 ERA across 10 1/3. And I think most interestingly is his slider has been absolutely dominating. 96th percentile swing strike rate. It's jumped up 6% from the previous year, while the sinker just comes in and steals all the strikes. So that pair of pitches has been helping him pitch really well this year. I don't know. Ian Hamilton seems like a guy that should be going multiple innings, but considering all the injuries we've seen in New York and their inability to keep their relievers healthy, Ian Hamilton is basically the only guy left unless you want to go to Nick Birdie.
Yeah. I mean, right now with the state of that bullpen, Hamilton is the only guy they trust outside of Holmes, really. And, you know, I feel like I'm, you know, beating a dead horse here, but like, I just, you know, Holmes doesn't really make sense as the closer. And I just, Hamilton, they're never going to do it. It's not going to happen. They're not going to make any sort of switch, but I just, you know, Hamilton in the closer role would make more sense with Holmes being able to be that high leverage guy. Like, you know, like what they're doing in Seattle with like Munoz, it's like, you should be able to use Holmes outside of just the ninth inning. Cause there are definitely situations where you really want a ground ball, and that's the best ground ball pitcher in all of baseball. So like, you know, it just feels weird that they're just stuck with him in the ninth inning only, with no one on base to start the ninth. It's just, I don't know. Hamilton is, you know, so either way, I don't think they're going to make a move with Holmes unless he starts, you know, having bad outings or if he gets hurt. But so, so Hamilton right now is more of a, you know, just watch list guy, unless you're in, you know, 14, 16 teamers, then, you know, then he can, you know, he's not going to hurt with ratios or anything. So, but yeah, he's not, nothing's imminent with him, you know, taking over the closer role there. And it, you know, is probably far fetched for to even suggest it will happen this year.
And the Yankees rivals, they are currently utilizing Kenley Jansen as the closer, which makes sense. One of the best closers of all time. But there is a sense, given his age and his, you know, performance going down, his abilities going down, there's a shot that he performs so bad that they take him out of the closer role. There's a part of me that thinks like he would have to perform like just so terribly that it forces the hands of the Red Sox, because I don't think that they're making any sort of move with Jansen there just because of his pedigree of being one of the best closers of all time. There's, I don't know, it seems messed up to use him outside of that ninth inning role. But if he were to get injured or, like I said, really perform terribly, there are options there. Not many. I think Chris Martin would probably be the first man up, but Justin Slayton has looked incredible this year. We talked about him earlier in the podcast, but 0.87 ERA. He's gotten one save already. And I think he would be the guy that you want to stash, especially because he's producing better right now than Martin is, and is a guy that you'd be able to roster on your team and not feel like you're wasting a roster spot because he's providing good ratios and a you know, decent number of strikeouts.
Yeah, I think this is more of a, you know, Jansen is struggling right now, and he is struggling, and he's probably hurt. He's just pitching through a back injury. Mm-hmm. Martin's been kind of dealing with some injuries too, but for the most part, he's looked good. But yeah, this Slayton spec is more what happens after the trade deadline, I guess, because, you know, Jansen, Martin, both free agents after the year. I don't picture this iteration of this Red Sox team being a playoff contender. Maybe the surprise, I hope so, but I just don't know if, you know, we're already starting to see what happens when they lose just two pitchers and, you know, what we're left with here. So I would imagine they're selling at the deadline. This was never a year they were trying to really contend anyway. So if you Martin and Jansen get dealt, you know, maybe Liam Hendricks comes back in August. I highly doubt that, though. I don't see any reason to rush him back. So yeah, maybe we get 2 months of Slayton closing, or you know, maybe Jansen finally goes on the IL, and they don't want to, you know, change Martin's role. I would imagine Martin would close, but I don't know. Slayton's pitched so well that he could force their hand into, you know, getting some save opportunities.
Yep. And we can stick on the theme of red as we move from the Red Sox to the Reds, where they have Alexis Diaz installed as the closer. He was very solid in the first half last year, and he hasn't done anything thus far to really give us concern. But his struggles in the second half last year have both Rick and I not really trusting him going forward. I don't see the Reds removing him from the closer role unless he does what he did in the second half last year. But even then, they didn't remove him from the closer role. There are a couple of veteran options like Emilio Pagan and Lucas Sims around who have had save roles in the past. But I think the most interesting guy here is Fernando Cruz, who I'm just now learning is 34 years old. Oh, yeah. Despite, you know, pitching last year for the first time in the majors since 2022. Before that, he hadn't ever pitched in the majors. He was pitching in Mexico and Puerto Rico for a long time, from like 2015 to 2022, which is a long time. And now he's 34 and he's come out and he's got an incredible splitter that he throws 50% of the time. Yeah. No, it is bonkers. 45% yeah. swinging strike rate in the 97th percentile among all splitters, and he's throwing it 50% of the time. That's all while throwing a mid-90s fastball that's paired with a cutter. And he's super interesting because, you know, he's a veteran. I don't think he's going to get flustered by pitching in late inning roles like that. And if he's got this splitter feel for the whole season, he's going to put up insane numbers. We've already seen 51% strikeout rate. He's got the second best swinging strike rate across his full arsenal. Fernando Cruz is really exciting. It's just about the Reds giving him an opportunity.
Yeah, this is another just kind of taking a leap of faith, and maybe Alexis Diaz has a couple bad outings, and maybe they get a little bit, you know, skeptical with him, because Cruz is definitely closer stuff here for sure. I mean, 76% whiff rate on his splitter right now.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's wild. And he's throwing it for, yeah, like you said, he's throwing it almost 50% of the time now. Last year it was around 36. So he's up that, and he's just like, you know what? This pitch is just so elite that I'm just going to throw it 50% of the time. Nobody really throws the splitter. He's throwing a splitter. Yeah. 50% of the time. Unless you're a two pitch pitcher, which he's still throwing his cutter a little bit and the four seamer as well. So, I mean, the cutter looks pretty, you know, promising as well as another secondary. This is a guy who probably is better against left-handed hitters. I haven't looked at the splits, but I would imagine he is. And, you know, I'm sure he's still fine against righties. But even if he doesn't close, I think there's, you know, obviously the strikeouts are huge, and, you know, he'll get definitely in holds leagues. He's worth a look. Alexis Diaz has been fine this year, like you said, but there's still, it still kind of looks like, you know, what we saw from him in the second half with the K to walk rate, 12%, whip at 1.36, just not the exciting Alexis Diaz we saw in the first half of last year. So I'm not so sure. Maybe that second half wasn't all just about like fatigue and, you know, being worn down, or, you know, maybe there's something, maybe hitters have just figured him out. Maybe there's something more to it.
Mm-hmm. And we'll move to Texas, where we've talked up Kirby Yates earlier in the podcast, and we're very excited to see him be in the closer role. But there's still that sense, as I hinted at before, that itching in the back of my head that maybe Kirby Yates doesn't still have it at 37 years old. And if that were the case, you know, maybe Jose Leclerc or David Robertson would step back up into the role, or one of our favorites, Josh Spores, who is currently injured with a shoulder injury, but proved last year in the first half that he is intriguing, and then proved it again in the playoffs, especially when he closed out the World Series for the champion Rangers. Josh Spores, super interesting guy with a fastball, slider, curveball combo. I don't know. What sort of path do you see? Like, what would have to happen for him to take over the closer role? There's so many doors right. for him to walk through.
That's the thing, is there's a lot that needs to happen here, but he was pitching really well before he got hurt. It does sound, there's a report today that it sounds like he's going to return Monday when first eligible. So he's, you know, mild injury, mostly precautionary. So he should be back next week. I think now that maybe Leclerc's kind of down the totem pole, where does Spores fit in when, you know, we talk about what happens if Kirby Yates has a couple bad outings? Who's up next? Is it, it's, you know, David Robertson obviously is going to factor in there, but if it's between him and Spores probably at this point. So I still, you know, Spores overall has, you know, probably the best stuff, but I do. Yeah. I wonder if Bruce Bochy likes him more as like the fireman hybrid, high leverage guy, but yeah, it's just a name to keep an eye on, because if he does ever end up in a closing role here, he's just got the ability to be a top, you know, 6-7 closer in the game right now. Yeah.
High praise for Josh Spores. We can move to Detroit, where we've already seen the closer role taken once to start the season, as Jason Foley took what we thought was Alex Lang's job. Shelby Miller is still around as well, one of their biggest offseason signings, but another guy that they acquired in the offseason, Andrew Chafin, the top lefty in the bullpen, has looked really good this year. His strikeout rate is way up at 43%, and that's thanks to a 17% swinging strike rate, so it seems pretty earned. And I think the biggest factor here is that the Tigers have taken him and said, hey, throw your slider way more. He's throwing it 20% more often, and it's paid off as the swing strike rate's up to 28%, which is in the 94th percentile. And I think that as a whole allows his whole arsenal to play up. That's usually the goal of throwing off-speed pitches more often, is because not only are they going to induce more swinging strikes, which is probably the best thing you can get, but it allows the sinker and the four-seamer to land in there for called strikes, which we've seen thus far, as both of them have elite called strike rates. What makes you put Chafin over Lang or Miller in terms of stashing?
I think it's just the left-handedness. I think that they're definitely going to mix and match. We've seen that. And Chafin's been the guy who's gotten some ninth inning work because of his being left-handed. I think that with him, I'm not expecting him to be like a full-time closer getting 20 saves. I think Foley's pretty safe as the primary guy here, but I do want, you know, even in a 12 teamer, I wonder if Chafin could be, you know, rosterable as just, you know, 10 saves with, you know, decent ratios and strikeouts. Cause yeah, that slider's always been really good. It's always been one of the best sliders from a left-handed reliever in baseball for, you know, years now. And it's great seeing him throw it 54% of the time compared to 35 last year. So, I imagine that's I've always wondered why he doesn't throw it more. It's always been a kind of a weird conundrum with me, because he's like 60% whiff rates on it like year after year, and he only throws it like, I mean, maybe that's why he was getting the whiff rates that high, but I mean, he's doing it right now at 54% of the time. So yeah, I just, you know, I think he could be their left-handed option to Foley being the right-handed, and that could be a really good duo in the back end in the ninth inning for them.
Sure. Yeah. We'll stick in the AL Central, where Jordan Leisure is probably one of the clearest stash candidates, mostly because he's a rookie and he's young and he's got great minor league stats, but also he's pitched pretty well. And I wouldn't say there's anything set in stone on the south side of Chicago. Michael Kopech seems to be the closer, but he hasn't exactly been lights out. We saw him blow a save just yesterday on Wednesday, leading to Davey Garcia earning a save, which, you know, throwback there. But Jordan Leisure has not looked quite dominant thus far, despite a perfect ERA across 6 1/3. The strikeouts aren't really where they were in the minors. He's at 24%, and this was a guy who was like consistently above 35% in the minors. But it's a good sign, though, that he's only walked 10% of the batters that he faced, because I think that was like our biggest concern, is that despite having big strikeout rates, which I think most of the top prospect relievers are guys that, oh wow, look how many guys he strikes out, but he walks 15% of guys. So it's good to see Leisure not giving up a ton of free passes. I'm not completely sold on what I've seen thus far, but there's definitely potential here as his four-seam fastball gets a lot of swinging strikes, and the slider is pretty solid as well. He also throws a curveball 15% of the time, which is incredible at stealing strikes, 94th percentile swinging strike, or what are they called? Called strikes. Thank you. This is what happens when you get 80 minutes into a podcast. Yeah. Anyway, Jordan Leisure, super interesting. I think one of the clear stash candidates, just not the highest ceiling, not because of his skills, but because of his situation on the White Sox.
Yeah, this is just purely a speculative one. He's looked fine this year. I mean, he's definitely an above average reliever, and probably the second best reliever on that team. This is just, you know, speculating on a Michael Kopech trade at the deadline or something like that to happen, or Kopech gets it hurt. Then it's to the White Sox put Leisure into the closing role right away. I'm also skeptical about that, but they probably should if Kopech's not, you know, on the roster.
Yep. And then we can sort of go full circle here, as we started off lamenting the disappearance and the, I don't want to say death, that seems pretty crazy, but the lack of Robert Stevenson in 2024. And so that means there are some closer stashes in LA, because, you know, we're not totally sold on Carlos Estevez, and Robert Stevenson isn't the clear-cut guy to stash. So Matt Moore sort of climbs right up top. I think Ben Joyce can also be considered, but he's not even in the majors, let alone pitching well in the minors. So I think Matt Moore is probably the only guy we can consider right now. The weird thing is that despite pitching so well over the past couple of years. Last year, he had zero save opportunities. I think he had three blown saves, but I think those were before. I don't think he ever pitched in the ninth inning. Maybe I'm wrong. But Matt Moore, after, you know, sort of surprising us in 2022, backed everything up in 2023. He 1.95 ERA in 22, 2.56 ERA in 23. And in his mid-30s as a former failed top prospect, I think everybody had given up. And it was sort of hard to believe that these 2 years in his mid-30s were going to be where Matt Moore finally broke out. But he's once again proven, hey, I am a different guy as a late-inning reliever. He hasn't walked anybody yet. I don't think much has changed from the past couple of years. And he remains with the Angels. I don't know. Are you actually picking up Matt Moore as a stash here? Are you waiting for Carlos Estevez to start cracking?
Yeah, I'm going to wait a little bit longer for Estevez to show some more cracks. But yeah, Moore is not someone to get too excited about, but he isn't Carlos Estevez. So, I mean, he's definitely I don't think there's anyone else really with Soriano now in the rotation. I don't think there's anyone else to really look at for potentially taking over that role.
Sure. And we'll stick in the AL West. And this one's actually really interesting. I'm glad you put this on here. In Oakland, Mason Miller has been absolutely dominant, completely proven me wrong, looking like one of the best closers in baseball. But can that hold? I don't think his stuff is going to fall off, but maybe he falls off in terms of his health. This is a guy that struggled with injuries throughout his career, so I would not put it past him to land on the IL at some point. Or maybe the A's do their best to limit his innings, as he's a guy that's they can't turn too often, and they can't even turn to him on back-to-back days. Meanwhile, Austin Adams, new addition to this bullpen, is looking like the second best option and is having one of his best years. He's striking out 38% of the batters he's facing. He's got a perfect ERA through 6 2/3. Austin Adams, pretty interesting. This is a sort of similar situation to Chicago, where it's like, even if Adams does take over the closer role, there's not going to be many opportunities, and he's got tougher competition ahead of him with Mason Miller. But Austin Adams is looking like a different pitcher this year.
Yeah, the whiff rate on his slider is at 53% right now. He's always been an interesting, you know, reliever just based on his like kind of funky delivery. You know, throws the slider a whole lot.
90%.
Yeah, it's just it's his thing. So it's not really closer material necessarily, but he's been their best reliever outside of Miller so far. And with Miller, it's just like, you know, does he get shut down at some point? Or maybe would they even consider stretching him out a little bit at some point? I don't know what their whole plan is with Mason Miller yet. So that's the only reason why I put Adams on here. Because yeah, what's the you know, future plans for Miller, and you know, also his health health history as well.
Yeah, great points there. And we'll wrap things up with one of my favorite teams, the Rockies. Just, you know, yeah, they're really fun.
I wanted to put someone. Yeah, I know. It's.
On my personal podcast, the Rockies are like, you know, our mascot. they're just always doing the goofiest stuff, and it's not even like the players. It's all the front office and the ownership and everything. There's no idea what they're doing. But anyway, let's wrap this up. Nick Mears has looked pretty decent in Colorado. Of course, he's pitching in Colorado, so not only is that a caveat to consider when you look at his numbers, but also it's going to make it harder for him to put up these numbers going forward. And ahead of him is Justin Lawrence, who has yet to get a save. The only guy to get a save is Jake Bird. And the Rockies, I think, have the same record as the White Sox. They just do it quietly because they're just like always like that. Yeah. But Mears is somewhat interesting just because he's pitching well and he's in Colorado. But I mean, without a clear cut closer and with nobody with incredible stuff, I don't know if I would ever do it.
No, this is just for like if you're in like a 32 team league.
Okay.
No, just like there's got to be someone. I mean, Lawrence has been bad. You know, every team, even the Rockies. The Rockies have had closers in the past that have been, you know, fantasy relevant. It's possible. I don't think it's going to be Lawrence this year. It's not going to be Tyler Kinley.
What about Victor Vodnik?
Vodnik's
97 mile per hour fastball.
Vodnik's the only other option. I toyed between him and Mears, but I feel like Mears is more of a, I mean, Mears also throws 97. He's got a 58.3% whiff rate on his slider as well, too. So that's what stuck out to me. There's some swing and miss ability here. And yeah, the fastball being up in velo this year, definitely intriguing. And he's pitched well so far. I mean, he looks like an actual, you know, major league reliever stat wise. And that's between him and Vodnik. That's pretty much all they have on this roster right now.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, really unfortunate. Hey, it's fun going to see a game there. I've been to a few games in Colorado. Sure.
I've heard it's a blast. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, you don't even think about the baseball. The baseball's there, but you're there to just hang out, which is nice. But those are the early closer stash candidates that we are suggesting to you right now. I'll run back down the list. Hunter Harvey, Trevor McGill, Jeff Hoffman, Sir Anthony Dominguez, Matt Brash, Gregory Santos, Ian Hamilton, Justin Slayton, Fernando Cruz, Josh Spores, Andrew Chafin, Jordan Leisure, Matt Moore, Austin Adams, and Nick Mears. And that'll wrap up this episode of In the Pen. Rick, why don't you go ahead and plug your Twitter and anything else you've got going on?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at I am Rick Graham. Just, you know, plugging away at the ranks, closer ranks, hold ranks, save plus hold ranks every week. Just doing that.
Cool. Yeah. Not much has changed over the last few years.
It's that pretty much every week. Yeah.
Hey, you found your niche. That's good. Yeah. You can follow me on Twitter at Jake Crumpler. You can follow the pod at In the Pen Pod. You can find all of my work at crumplerbaseball.com. I'm doing the weekend editions of the First Pitch podcast, Pitcher Lists daily podcast. You can find my personal podcast, Free Baseball, over on the Athletes Hub at Athletes Hub on Twitter. And you can read my daily or my weekly contribution to the Reliever Ranks article, Pitcher Lists daily bullpen article. Mine come out on Mondays, so make sure to tune in for those. But that'll do it for this episode of In the Pen. We'll talk to you all next week.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.